This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Last night, the Texas primaries brought voters out to the polls to decide the Democratic and Republican Party nominations across Texas. Locally, the battle for district attorney and the newcomer bids for County Commissioner Precinct 2 seat challenged Bexar County incumbents Nico LaHood and Paul Elizondo, respectively. And there are Democrats looking across Texas for an opening either to flip the state blue or to claim needed seats in Washington, D.C. What political races came out as expected? Which ones defy you, stunned you? Which election results are surprising? What happens now? You can call in with your questions and comments. What did you see? What trends are you seeing out there? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. We're joined this half hour by Emily Ramshaw. She's the editor-in-chief of the Texas Tribune, and Gilbert Garcia. He's a Metro columnist for the San Antonio Express News. It's great to have you both here after a late night last night.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Emily, what do you see out there?
Boy, I'm tired. What I see out there is probably what you all see out there, which is, you know, we saw Democratic turnout that looked like it was going to be super strong. And then while it was stronger, it's still sort of the excitement around that faded a little bit last night when we saw some of Beto O'Rourke's numbers in the U.S. Senate race. We saw, you know, Governor Abbott, who'd played pretty aggressively in a handful of legislative races, not perform particularly well. And we saw some incumbents who we thought might be in trouble keep their jobs, George P. Bush in the Land Commissioner's Office, Sid Miller in the Agriculture Commissioner's Office. So a whole lot of findings to talk about.
People were getting all hyped up about the Democratic turnout in the primaries and thinking that there was going to be a sea change across Texas. And now we're looking at the numbers and we're seeing what, Emily?
Well, it's sort of like the Wendy Davis effect, right? You know, we thought that people were super mobilized. We saw some really strong early voting numbers. And while it's important to note that Democratic early voting numbers were up, they were quite a bit up, you know, when it comes down to it, on Election Day, Republican numbers are just enormous. And so they really, really trump Democratic numbers no matter what.
So it looks like there are about a million more Republicans voting in Texas than Democrats, according to last night's...
Exactly, yes. And even though turnout numbers, again, were up, that's still the sort of the takeaway. And I think what was sort of most compelling, to bring it to the U.S. Senate race for a second, was that, you know, Beto O'Rourke, who was considered just so far and away front runner for the seat, he won just under 62% of the vote, which is still a huge number, sends him, you know, into the general election without a runoff. But it's interesting to note that there were two sort of no-name candidates who still got a combined, you know, 35, almost 40% of the vote. So he still has a really steep uphill climb. And I think if you are a national Democrat wondering whether you're going to spend big money in Texas on this race, you might have some question marks.
Definitely echoes of Wendy Davis and her governor run coming up short like that in the primary 4 years ago. So, Gilbert Garcia, what's your big takeaway?
I think when we look particularly at Bexar County, there was a purge of Democratic incumbents, and I think there was also the sense that if Democrats are looking to begin the process of flipping the state, they want to do it with Democrats that they feel good about, Democrats who they consider to be strong progressives. I mean, we saw some amazing things in Bexar County State Representative Tomas Uresti, after one term, got voted out by someone who was, he had been, Leo Pacheco, who had been county chair 22 years ago, but was really not known by very many people, and no one gave him a chance. And Tomas Uresti, I think primarily because his brother Carlos was recently convicted on 11 felony counts, I think that he paid the price for that.
Yeah, but you got to live by the name, die by the name.
Absolutely, he got elected on the strength of that name, and he got voted out on. But we also saw some things. Obviously, the district attorney Nico LaHood was someone seen by local Democrats as not progressive enough. He got voted out.
All right, because here's a clip of former district attorney. He's still the district attorney. He's a lame duck district attorney
for nine LaHood, or 10 months.
And we're going to follow that up with a clip from Joe Gonzalez.
I'll follow a calling as I'm called to at the right time. I mean, you know, it's just right now, I'm just going to continue to work for 9 months, and I'll cross every bridge when I get there.
So what do you want to say to voters who supported you, or what do you want to say to
man.
People that were...
For the voters who supported me, I'm just humbled by their support. They saw the truth, And I just, it just means the world to me and to my family. And the people that I made a difference in their lives, and that they encourage me every single day, and they're praying for me, and they come up to us and thank not just me, but the office for the way we, the culture in that office and the way we conduct ourselves. That's the payback. That's the reward right there, because it's generational blessings.
And you were talking in your concession speech about money that was funneled in by, I think, maybe George Soros. Well, why make mention of that?
Because it's the truth. Why not? I mean, you know, as a DA, you speak truth. I've always spoken truth. I don't stop speaking truth. I mean, it's the truth. I mean, $1 million came in over 3 weeks. So you can't, that's a factor. You can't just ignore that fact.
So, Mr. Gonzalez, tell me about what you want to do if you were to win the general election. What would you change in the DA's office?
Okay, that's what I do want to focus on reform. I want to focus on fighting violent crime. I want to focus reducing those numbers of dismissals in the domestic violence area. And then I want to focus on restorative justice, the pretrial diversion programs. I want to increase that.
Why do you think that voters chose you so overwhelmingly over the incumbent D.A. LaHood?
I do believe that it's a mandate from the voters to have someone in that office that has better temperament.
And that was Joe Gonzalez, who won last night in this Bexar County nomination for district attorney. And so your reaction real quick to that, Gilbert Garcia?
Well, Nico LaHood was someone who had described himself as a conservative. He had, alienated.
Did he lose his nomination the day he came out as an anti-vaccination?
I think that was the turning point. Absolutely. You know, he used his office to kind of go on a crusade against vaccinations. He had personal reasons. He had a child who was on the spectrum that he believed had been negatively affected by vaccinations. But I think a lot of his 2014 supporters turned on him. And then there were other instances where he, you know, he infamously got into trouble for allegedly threatening a couple of attorneys in court.
Temperament issues.
Right.
So Emily Ramshaw at the Texas Tribune, are you looking at the DA's race in Waco? Were you following that?
We weren't really. We were pretty super focused on statewide races and on Texas legislative races.
Well, it's interesting what happened there with that, because of the Twin Peaks shootout at the restaurant there. The district attorney, Abel Reyna, he lost his primary election to an opponent, Barry Johnson. So there appears to be some sort of echo or fallout from the way that case was handled. That was interesting. And so what are y'all looking at, any really kind of local races, or just the statewide ramifications, waves, Emily Ramshaw?
We paid most attention to statewide ramifications, but there were a lot of local races that we followed closely, particularly congressional and legislative races. I mean, a couple that are worth talking about. You know, Texas is sending what looks like its first two Latino women to Congress, which is a pretty huge deal. And so those are races you can expect to see. Those are Democrats who are likely to be have very light opposition in November. You know, a whole bunch of races going to runoffs. 5 of the 8 open congressional primary races are headed to runoffs, a few that were settled on Tuesday night. So it was just, you know, overwhelming numbers of candidates. One other big takeaway that we saw, it was an amazing night for women. There were a ton of female candidates who I think really came to the forefront in light of the Me Too movement. And both on the Democratic and Republican side, they tended to be top vote getters, either you know, winning outright or headed to runoffs.
But, and that could be impacting a county commissioner's race here in San Antonio. We'll be talking about a challenge that Paul Elizondo faces. The number to call if you've got a question or comment, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this.
In writing the music for the Oscar-winning animated film Coco, the filmmakers and songwriters went to Mexico to gather as much authentic material as they could.
So when you see the characters dancing, they are really dancing to, you know, authentic zapateado.
Next time on Fronteras, Texas native and Latina Hollywood composer Germaine Franco talks about writing for Coco. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about some problems with the Meals on Wheels program. But first, we're talking about what happened last night with the primary elections across state and here in Bexar County. With me on the line is Emily Ramshaw from Texas Tribune, and in the studio, Gilbert Garcia from the San Antonio Express News. We are talking about it's kind of a stunner that Paul Elizondo has been pulled into a runoff in his attempt to win another term on the county commissioner's court, Gilbert Garcia, and, right. and how do you see that shaping up?
Well, you know, to put it in context, Paul Elizondo is basically the dean of the Bexar County Commissioner's Court. He served there for more than 30 years. He's the person who really crafts the budget. Nelson Wolf, the county judge servant, trusts him with that. And he's very close to Leticia Vandepute. They go way back. But he had two challengers in this Democratic primary. And he basically finished with about 45%. Ketha Rodriguez, who runs the Veterans Service Office for Bexar County and is a former Marine, finished second in 30%. And getting back to what Emily said, I mean, this is an example, a really strong example of a woman doing very well in a primary race. And I think there's a feeling that Paul Elizondo is in serious trouble, maybe for the first time in his tenure.
He's had that seat for over 30 years.
That's right. And he's the person who finished third, Mario Bravo, who's an environmental activist, is he looks at this as he entered the race because he felt that there was a need for reform at the county level and that Paul Elizondo was kind of an example of what needs to change. And he's all in for Ketha Rodriguez's runoff campaign. So I think Paul Elizondo is facing a very serious challenge here.
Let's hear from last night from Paul Elizondo.
I'm totally right now involved with the Women and Children's Hospital, with health issues, with mental health in particular, and of course, large project like the San Pedro Creek, the completion of those projects which we have begun already.
Another race we're looking at is how Ina Mijares, she was able to decidedly win re-election for her seat, a District 124 state representative against Sergio Contreras. It's like 70% of the vote she was able to get in that primary. But that was a proxy battle between her and Manuel Medina. And Manuel Medina is the county chair of Bexar County. Mm-hmm. He lost his seat. And this is what Representative Mijares said about that.
Personally, I believe he lost his own election after his behavior with the mayoral race. The people of San Antonio Bexar County didn't forget that. His decision to side with the Tea Party Republicans hurt him. So, you know, it was his race to lose, and he definitely lost it tonight. I am very excited to see a new beginning for the Bexar County Democratic Party, and I think Monica Alcantara is going to do a wonderful job in uniting the party and bringing transparency.
So they don't have to go to a general election. That race is decided. When does she take over?
My understanding is that it'll happen sometime in the summer after there's a transition that takes place. And you know, he was very much attached to Nico LaHood. They campaigned together, and I think that they fell together in this primary.
Back to the statewide races, people were obviously focusing on the governor's race, and Emily Ramshaw, Lupe Valdez, and Andrew White, they're going to be going to a runoff.
They are headed to a runoff in May. Lupe Valdez, you know, didn't cross the 50% threshold that you needed to avoid a runoff. Andrew White still trailed her. She was more in the 40% realm. There were 9 candidates in that race. You know, Andrew White is still very optimistic that he has some time to make up the difference between now and May. But I think it's a pretty safe bet that she is going to cruise toward the governor's race with Governor Abbott. Now, once she gets there, she'll be in some pretty hot water. He has an enormous war chest and very high name ID. It's not looking like that the governor's mansion is going to switch to the Democrats anytime soon.
So before, we had been thinking about, is it time for the Castro brothers to jump into statewide politics? Mm-hmm. And looking at what we're seeing with the turnout from last night, some people have been thinking they should have jumped in. They missed an opportunity, or now we can say they were smart to stay out. Emily Ramshaw, do you have an idea?
So that's the big question. You know, until somebody takes the plunge, nobody's going to get elected. But the challenge right now is that the Democratic ticket is just super weak. I mean, when Beto O'Rourke was looking to his right or looking to his left mm-hmm. on the ballot, there was really no one of great substance who could help sort of lift him up. So I think, you know, maybe the Castro brothers were smart for staying out of it because it wasn't their time yet. But until some Democrats take a big risk, some really prominent Democrats take a big risk, you know, I think we're going to keep seeing these slates of really lackluster mm-hmm. candidates.
Yeah. And Gilbert?
Yeah, and I think that, as Emily said, I mean, on the statewide, I think the Democrats look and think we've got long shot hope with Beto O'Rourke if he can just energize people enough to get a big turnout. But otherwise, I think the Democrats, when we talk about a blue wave, I think what the Democrats are really hoping for in Texas this year is just maybe to flip some legislative seats, maybe flip a couple of congressional seats. That's really what their best prospect is.
But we're seeing the value of having a Hispanic surname on the Democratic ticket and how it can hurt you actually on the Republican ticket. But, you know, when we have candidates who don't put any money into a race, challenging someone like Beto Rodriguez and actually doing really well, you're going to wonder, like, if you have to kind of show up as an established candidate with a track record, a war chest, and a Hispanic surname in order to excite the base and get people to come out and vote for you. You look at the turnout along the border, yeah. They're going to go for the Hispanic surname. And so that's you're waiting for someone. And that sounds like a Castro, Emily Ramshaw.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what a lot of folks are waiting for. But again, the question is whether Texas is just not there yet. When you look at these turnout numbers, you know, the Republicans are still the overwhelming majority. I mean, you know, one race where I'm really curious, somebody else who might consider playing this role is somebody like Trey Martinez Fisher, mm-hmm. you know, who came back and defeated an incumbent last night in the Democratic primary. You know, I think they're waiting for some sort of big-name Democratic candidates to throw their weight around and throw in. And I think it was interesting seeing TMF come back.
Yeah, but it was like squeaker. It was not a runaway.
It's not easy beating an incumbent.
Like about 200 votes.
100 votes, yeah.
That's right.
Right.
What does that mean, though, that Trey Martinez Fisher was able to overcome Diana Arevalo? Gilbert?
There were polls taken over the course of this primary campaign that indicated that a great majority of voters in the district on the Democratic side thought that Trey Martinez Fisher was still their representative. So she had that hurdle. She hadn't been in office very long. Trey Martinez Fisher was obviously,
I could probably count on one finger the number of press releases that I got from her when she was in the House.
You know, he was a dynamic presence in the House, so that was difficult. I think she really also, she had time early in 2017, before it became obvious that he was going to try to reclaim that seat, to do more fundraising, to really, to kind of build a campaign, and I think she was slow getting that going, and once he got in the race, it was tough, but as you said, she almost pulled it out anyway.
Yeah, and then he did lose running for the state senator against Jose Menendez. Jose Menendez supported Diana Arevalo. I wonder if that's going to make Trey Martinez gun-shy in the future trying to climb the political ladder. But also, so another really big thing to focus on in Texas, if you're looking statewide, how important it is that when Greg Abbott, the governor, targets some sitting incumbent representatives in the Republican Party, and what this talk speaks to about having an independent legislature in Austin. And here's a clip from Lyle Larson. He was one of those that was targeted last night.
There's going to be a lot of mending that needs to take place with the governor's office and in the Texas House. There's a lot of people upset that he engaged sitting members and used resources against them.
Emily Ramshaw, do you think that Governor Abbott is rethinking that strategy this morning?
You know, it was a really unusual strategy from the beginning because there was sort of not a win-win situation here. These were candidates, two of the three were almost certain to keep their seats. I mean, I think that it puts him in an awkward situation depending on how those legislators seek to behave, whether they end up in positions of leadership in the House. So, you know, I think he does have some fences to mend if he wants to mend those fences, but I doubt at this point he's going to be extending the olive branch.
And you know, it was obvious as the primary campaign rolled on that Chris Fales, the mayor of Hollywood Park, who Governor Abbott endorsed against Lyle Larson, that this was someone that the governor knew almost nothing about. He was basically he supported him because he was not Lyle Larson, and there was some kind of personal vendetta that seemed to be playing out there.
Right, because Lyle Larson, state rep, had filed a bill which would prevent the governor from appointing people to state boards who they donate an X amount of money to the governor's campaign. Lyle Larson called it an end of pay-to-play politics. He was an actual draining the swamp kind of an action. And when it comes down to it, the establishment politics doesn't like that stuff. Emily Ramshaw, but the importance of an independent legislature, even when they're of the same party, did we establish that last night?
You know, I think we established some pretty solid independence on the part of Texas voters. They clearly knew who they wanted to elect. They had relationships with their legislators, and they went to the polls for them. I think what we did learn is that, you know, a governor's stamp of approval one way or another doesn't actually go that far in a legislative primary.
We're seeing a tug-of-war also in the Democratic Party. There's some Bernie Sanders followers that were on the ticket. And how did they do, Gilbert?
Well, I think one of the most fascinating races, from my perspective, was U.S. District 23. This has been a swing district for many years, going back and forth. Right now, it's held by Republican Will Hurd. And you had a really competitive Democratic race. And a lot of the focus was on Jay Hewlings, a former U.S. attorney. He went to law school with the Castro brothers. He had them campaigning with him. He had a lot of money. He finished fourth, and the second place finisher who was able to make the runoff was Rick Trevino, who's a San Antonio school teacher, had no money, and was basically just going door to door. It's across this sprawling district. And he was a Bernie Sanders delegate to the Democratic National Convention in 2016. So I think that you saw there was a sense that the indivisible movement, which is a very progressive movement that is basically sort of a progressive answer to what the Tea Party movement was doing 8 years ago, that I think you felt the force of that in races like that, where you saw some unabashed progressives who didn't necessarily have the money or the resources or the establishment support doing very well.
And Emily Ramshaw, are you seeing the Texas Democratic Party going further to the left?
You know, in some cases, yes, but I think really what they're trying to figure out is they're going to recalibrate after this election and try to figure out what is our strategy, how do we unify people. In one congressional race, Congressional District 7, the Democrats really were attacking each other, and I think they looked at themselves in that case and thought, this is not healthy, this isn't going to help us get more Texans, more Democrats in Texas elected.
We have a runoff coming up in May 22nd. That's going to be a lot of interesting races, but there's a different type of electorate that shows up for runoffs. How will that weigh into probably the final decisions, Emily?
Well, even smaller turnout. So, you know, if you think elections right now are decided by a very small number of people, in runoffs, the pool gets just tinier and tinier. So it means the noisiest people have the biggest outcome, not, you know, average people, average voters.
And Gilbert Garcia, back to the race for district attorney with the Bexar County Democratic Party. Nico LaHood, he prevented the Express News from going into his campaign watch event last night.
Right.
A lot of bad blood between the Express News columns that you've written and your Brian Chasnoff, your contemporary, has written. Where do you think that's going? I mean, he's still going to be in office till the end of the year.
Yeah, well, I don't expect him to, have much contact with the Express News.
You still got to cover. We've got the Jeanine Jones killer nurse mm-hmm. trial coming up here in weeks. That's an important thing. You know, we still got to keep lines of communication open with the district attorney's office and the newspaper.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think on occasion, I mean, he will communicate with some members of the Express News. Occasionally we'll get a response from him, but it's inconsistent, and it depends on whether he's upset about something that ran that week. So
are you going to have concerns that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, this is what the paper has been dealing with for most of the 4 years that he's been in office.
All right. Well, I want to thank Emily Ramshaw, the Texas Tribune, for joining us, helping us decipher some of the cryptic results from last night's campaign, and also Gilbert Garcia, the San Antonio Express News columnist, looking at the local races here. And when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about Meals on Wheels. They have been dealt a blow. They have scrambled and found some resources to keep going in South Texas. But is this a permanent fix or just a Band-Aid? What needs to happen to keep Meals on Wheels on the road? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned.